What's your Everest? You know, the highest mountain on earth, a metaphor for a goal that is so big that it scares you to even speak it out loud. That goal that takes more than a season, a year, or maybe takes a lifetime to even accomplish. I'm Colleen Rue, the voice of the mountain and your host as we meet inspiring individuals who know what it's like to set big goals and how to accomplish them. Welcome to My Everest, a 29029 podcast. Beginning in 2017, we have had a front row seat to thousands of individuals who have found their way to their own personal Everest while climbing 29029. We can share story after story of participants who found a bigger and better version of themselves in 20 weeks of training and over those 36 hours struggling up the slopes of a mountain. It's so inspiring to see people literally transform before your eyes into more than they ever thought they could be. Over the past few seasons, we've seen the reasons why people choose to climb, broaden, and expand. While self-mastery is still a big motivator to take on the challenge of climbing 29,029 feet, participants are showing up for far greater reasons than just themselves.
My mantra is exceed perceived potential. And whatever capacity, whatever avenue that means, like whether it's for work, whether that's in your family, whether that's a physical endeavor, to exceed your own perceived potential of what you can do is, I think, one of the most beautiful things that we can do.
We've seen people raise hundreds of thousands of dollars for charitable foundations and personal causes, the impact of their 29029 experience rippling throughout their communities and the world. Participants are using their own physical and mental strength not just to change themselves, but to motivate all of us.
I've been blessed with mentors and coaches and an education and abundance in my life. And I just thought, you know, like I have a chance to utilize all of that in a way to give back to these families and kids in Nepal who don't have those kinds of resources around them.
Dana Bouchard came to the mountain from a small town in southern Utah with a big purpose. Her goal was to help children and families who lived literally in the shadow of Mount Everest. Her climb would benefit their daily climb. She had seen the faces of the Nepalese children struggling for basic skills and opportunity. They hadn't signed up for the mountain they were asked to climb every day of their lives, but Dana did.
I get pictures of these kids all the time and I can see them in my mind. I'm like, you know why you're here. You know what you're doing. Keep it going.
And she was able to use 29029 to build something life-changing in a country she'd never even stepped foot in.
I have a definite fascination with the Himalayas. So when I saw the name, it drew me in. And then when I looked at the event, I knew I had to do it at some point, but 2020 was such an odd year. I was like, well, this isn't the year. And I actually saw it like just right after you guys had done registration for 2021. It's already done. And I'm like, okay, well, I got to keep it in mind. So it was always on my radar.
Yeah. So you were seeing it and seeing those numbers and you knew because, you know, you were fascinated. I'm kind of one of those people too, where mm-hmm. I've always been a little bit fascinated with the Everest stories and the people yes. who climb and the books about it and things like that. And then you see this 29029 and some people are like, what in the world do those numbers mean? But for you, yeah. they kind of triggered something for you.
Oh, for sure.
You pulled the trigger so it was late 2021 and you ended up fundraising
yeah.
with your experience. So who were you fundraising for?
Eternal Hope International, which is a nonprofit that is based in Nepal, and they help kids who live in the slums to get educated, to go to school, who wouldn't otherwise get a chance.
Was this something you had experience with before, or did it come about because of 29029?
For the last 5 years since I started my barbershop, my shop has been giving 1% every year to their organization. And then what came about was in the fall of 2021, my friend Usha, who founded the program, this Nepalese woman who was a doctor in Nepal and gave that up to start her nonprofit to help children. She had told me that she wanted to have a job skills training center for their graduates to get advanced job skills training and like school teaching, different trades, small business, agricultural and then probably down the line, some tourism and accounting and hospitality. So she had told me that. And then when I got into 29029, it clicked. There was a moment I just said, I'm going to be climbing almost 30,000 feet. I should try to raise $30,000. And I knew what I wanted to do. I knew, like, for Usha's dream to come true, like, this was a potential avenue. And I thought, I know I can make this happen. I can raise $30,000 for these guys. And that's where it started.
Wow. So that's so neat that you already had that experience with them. And then you were able to swing that into this. And $30,000. What did you end up raising?
$34,000.
Wow. $34,000. Yeah. So kind of take me through how that worked with your fundraising. And that's a big number. When you say 30,000, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's a big number for somebody to raise. Yeah. So how did that go for you?
It was an interesting experience because I am new to fundraising. I did one other fundraiser last year at my shop and we raised about $7,500. But 30,000 is definitely a chunk for somebody who's not normally in that role. As soon as I was in 29029 officially, and then I knew that I was going to do this fundraiser, I began putting together marketing materials. I started writing, I started gathering images and putting together a whole like packet on Google Slides. And then I just began emailing that. I had it all proofed and I just started emailing it to anybody who would listen, like businesses, friends, other entrepreneurs and nutrition companies, gear companies. I just sent it out. I talked to everybody I could about it. And the barbershop's a pretty organic place to do that. That helped a ton. My clients, I mean, my Benchmark community, my shop's called Benchmark Barbershop. Benchmark community is, they just rallied, but even then it's still a large chunk. So on an individual level, there were donations coming in and sometimes it was $100 and sometimes it was $50 and sometimes it was, you know, $500 or $900. And so all of that was adding up in a beautiful way, but I wasn't getting like those big donations that I was really looking for. And I just kept thinking, you know, the economy is kind of tough right now. Everything's going up in price. Like we have inflation. And so I had to think bigger, like I need to go to businesses. And so I just really hit that side of it hard.
Was that something that was comfortable for you? I mean, like
it's weird. Like I feel a little timid sometimes. Of course, I don't know anybody who likes to ask for money, but I knew the cause was great. My job was to portray the importance and like the impact that their donation would make. And that honestly, like that value, you just can't really put a price on. And so I felt like if I could tell the story in a way and like really show people how much impact they're making, then that of course can sell itself. And if they believe in me and what I'm doing and that I'm capable of doing this hike and putting my physical efforts and mental efforts on the line for these families and kids, then like together we can do this. And I called in my pitch, in my deck, I called them all my outreach enthusiasts. You know, I just wanted them to feel like it was a team effort and that I couldn't do this without them. It was very much a team effort.
I mean, you really had to kind of step outside of yourself, but you were so committed to the cause. And I think that's really where I love to see anyone who decides to take on something, because endurance sport a lot of time can be such a self-centered focus.
Sure.
I mean, it's like, Oh, you want to go climb a mountain because you want to feel good about yourself and get it done. But when you bring in this different why, when you bring in these kids mm-hmm. who live in mm-hmm. this area of the world that they don't have the things that we have and they don't have the opportunities, and you think about them and then you're able to put that together with your abilities and raise those funds. I mean, it just changes endurance sport. It changes these events mm-hmm. into something so much bigger than just climbing a mountain.
I totally agree. And it felt like while it was daunting and there were times I was like, I feel like the fundraising is like way harder than the actual event. Not to take away from the physical of 29029, because it's definitely like one of the hardest things I've done, but it's daunting to persevere in that realm of fundraising where you don't know where the money's going to come from. You just are putting it out there. And things came together in some really cool ways that I'm so grateful for, because now I did 29029 Snow Basin 1, and that was the 18th and through the 20th.
Right, of August, yeah.
So by the 6th of August, I had only raised $6,400.
Really?
So I was only a couple weeks away.
Wow.
And I was still just
reeling about that. Like,
right.
I mean, just like, oh my gosh, I've made this commitment. How is this going to fall together? So what did you do?
One thing that was really cute and really awesome, my brother Brent, he had donated already. And then he has a small family, some younger kids. And he thought it would be really worthwhile for his kids to learn some fundraising themselves. And so they had a lemonade stand out on the trail near where they live for the bikers and hikers to get drinks. And in 2 hours, they raised $400.
Oh, my goodness.
And they had so much fun. They had my flyers out there and all that. And I was so grateful. And I thought it was so cool. But my brother's wife, she also participates in some events and some triathlons. And her friend that she trained with works for doTERRA. And she told my sister-in-law, Kat, tell your sister-in-law about the doTERRA matching program. And if you have started a fundraiser and it's all on your own and you're doing the legwork, you can submit your project to doTERRA and they will review it. If it meets their criteria, they will match what you make.
Wow.
Like up to a certain amount. It was at that point, I think that was like the 11th of August.
You're just creeping up on this date.
I emailed them, and 3 days before 29029, they sent me an approval email. Wow. It was down to the wire, literally. But they said, we will donate up to $15,000 to match your program.
Wow.
So I knew, okay, I was at $6,400. And then I had some other decent donations come through before, because what happened was St. George News did an article. I had reached out to them and told them what I was doing. And Jessie Bang came out and she came to my shop and we interviewed and talked about it. And that also drove some donations. More Benchmark community came through. I had some corporate sponsors. And then I knew as I was in the event, I would continue to get donations. I knew that I could get to that $15,000 mark and that doTERRA would take care of the rest.
Yeah.
So that's all I really needed to do.
Was get there.
So then when, I was just beside myself when I received that email, right? I was just like, this is it. It's going to happen. Like, it's pretty much there now, right? I mean, I was really overcome and really overjoyed about the whole situation, because in my mind, I could see it all coming together. So that was pretty special.
There's so many people who look at fundraising, you know, then they're like, oh my gosh, I can't do that. There's just too much. But I love how you just started, you went out, you used your resources that you had, but then you realize that there are some of these other resources out there from mm-hmm. other businesses who do matching, like doTERRA did for you mm-hmm. and other big companies and entrepreneurs who have things in place to help people who are fundraising to make sure that you can make these donations to the near and dear charities of your heart. And it's like, you may not know about those, but if you start working forward,
it's all the networking. As I started talking about it, it got other people talking about it. My sister-in-law starts talking about it while she's in an event. It's through those channels that it all happened. And that's why I say, like, it was such a team effort. I couldn't have done it without these people, like, sharing the message. I mean, my daughter, my kids, they sent out the message to whoever they could. And it was just this snowball effect.
Yeah.
And it was great.
Well, and it's possible. That I think that's the thing, because I know for me, fundraising always seems so big. And
it is.
But at the end of the day, we have to find that why. We talk about this on the mountain all the time.
Yes.
What's your why to get you to the top? Because there's going to be parts of 29029 or whatever endurance event you're doing or whatever hard thing you're doing that you're just not wanting to go anymore. You're going to want to give up. And if that why is strong enough, you can overcome some of those mountain moments. Did you find that when you were on the mountain?
I did. My hardest ascent was ascent number 8. The reasoning was we had that storm the night before. In my mind, going into 29029, I felt strongly that I could do probably 9 ascents by into the night. Like, I could do 9, maybe 10. And I only did 7 because my energy was kind of zapped from the cold and shivering and waiting at the lodge for the gondola to come back online.
I mean, it was late. So it was, we were talking like, it was in the afternoon when we had the first straight and delay.
Right. I was on ascent number 6.
Okay.
I had forgotten my jacket. I didn't forget. I chose not to take my jacket. I saw the clouds. I saw what was happening and I chose not to take my jacket. So that's on me. But as the rain came and I heard you guys announce at the bottom that you were not sending any hikers up, I was like, okay, well, if I keep moving, I'll stay warm. I'll be all right. I'm not worried. I kept going. And then at aid station 2, they pulled me in the tent for lightning. And I hung out there for 15 minutes. And I did end up going to sleep after that 7th ascent. And I slept till 5:30 in the morning and got up. And so when I got up to do 8, my mind was in a totally different place.
Yeah.
And it wasn't physical that was dragging me down. It was my mind. And I was like discouraged that I hadn't met my initial goal for a sense. And I was really kind of bogged down by that. During my climb, I just was fighting that. And I kept telling myself like, so what? Like, so what? You are where you are right now. You got to move forward. And you can't let this get in the way or deter. Like, just because you didn't end up where you wanted to be last night doesn't mean you're not going to finish. You kind of have to talk yourself through those mental challenges, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was probably my hardest mentally. And I kept thinking about those kids. I get pictures of these kids all the time and I can see them in my mind. I'm like, you know why you're here. You know what you're doing. Keep it going.
Because when you look at someone who lives a life like those kids live and every day is a Mount Everest climb for them.
Yeah. It's every survival. Day.
Yeah.
For sure.
And it's like, can we just, in our comfort and aid stations and good clothing that we have and friends and support around, just keep moving forward?
Exactly.
You know, what inspiration we can draw for that. I want to hear about some of your stories, though, on the mountain and some of those things that happened on the mountain as you get there. You know, everybody always says when they get to Snow Basin, they look up at that mountain. They're like, oh, my gosh, because it just looks so massive from the lodge.
Yeah, for sure. I love that mountain. That first mile and 3/4 is a grind. But you know what? I enjoyed it so much. Like, I enjoy the climb. I'm by myself. I didn't have teammates or friends doing it with me. My husband was there as a support, just rallying. And I just enjoyed, like, getting to know a few of the people. And I think, you know, the first family I met was at the dinner the first night before the event was the Denver family. I can't remember his name, but in the boot.
Oh, the Sellners.
Yes,
Dan Sellner. Yeah. Uh-huh.
That was the first family I met. And I sat with them for dinner. And I was like, this guy in his boot. And I go, well, here you are, Dana. Like, you're at 29029. And these people, this is the community that you've chosen to surround yourself with.
Right. I mean, we should tell Dan's story so everybody knows. Dan showed up in the mountain and he was due to have surgery on his ankle.
In a few weeks.
Just a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
He had a hard boot on.
Mm-hmm.
And he went on to climb 10 ascents.
It was somewhere
like
close.
8 to 10
yeah. or something. Yeah.
It was some crazy number for some guy who has no flexion in his ankle.
There's no tread on his boot either. No. Like, it's just a plastic boot.
No, you see him going by and you're like, oh, come on, you can get up this mountain. I mean, those are, like you said, those are the type of people.
Yeah. And he and I interacted again on the mountain. I don't remember which ascent we were on, but he was taking a break and we visited for a while and he's like, you got to get going. And I'm like, I know, but you know what? This is inspiring to me.
Yeah.
And I couldn't really help myself. The stories on the mountain are what kept me going a lot too. I mean, I'm from Utah, so I'm acquainted with elevation. You get talking to people who are from sea level, and I felt like it was more often than not that I'm talking to people from sea level. And that inspired me. I'm like, good for you. You know what? Like, I almost feel a little spoiled. Like, I've grown up in Utah and like my body's more accustomed to it. And you're here, like, good for you.
Yeah. People just willing to take a chance.
Totally. I mean, and I talked to a couple people who had never done a 5K and they're just extending themselves in the most amazing way. And I love cheering for people. I love seeing people put their limits on the line to see what they're capable of. My mantra is exceed perceived potential. And whatever capacity, whatever avenue that means, like whether it's for work, whether that's in your family, whether that's a physical endeavor, to exceed your own perceived potential of what you can do is, I think, one of the most beautiful things that we can do. And when I see other people doing it, I mean, I get teary-eyed and I'm not the most emotional, but I love seeing that grit.
When we see it time and time again on the mountain, and why do you think it is? Like, what brings people to that point where they want to see their potential? They want to exceed their potential.
We just go through so many hard things in life, but to do something on your own and like to do something to prove to yourself that you can, maybe you need to overcome your own limitations in your mind. I think we all do that. We have self-limiting beliefs. And then I think we hear those voices and we start to believe those voices. We're ultimately responsible for kicking those voices out and changing the story. Those are powerful moments. And I think people crave that in a way to like, they know what they need to do to maybe show themselves, to maybe train their brain to tell a different story. Like, you know what? I did 29-029. I can tell myself a different story now. Like, I did something I never thought I could do.
When we choose hard, we see greater potential. We see ourselves exceeding what we ever thought was possible.
Absolutely.
And so that making that conscious choice. And I think that's what draws people into that endurance world. And it's like, wait, could I do this? And if I did this, who am I going to be on the other side of that?
Of course.
And it really changes people.
Like that human performance and the spirit of that value, you just can't. I don't know where else you find that, really. I know my husband might feel like a little, I don't know. I won't pretend to know how he might feel about this, but I told him, you know, he was there not doing the event, but supporting me in the event. And I even told him a couple weeks after, in my observation of him, he was a different person on the mountain. He was a higher version of himself on the mountain than he, I think, even realized. And nobody knows this and knew this at the time, but he was days away from major back surgery. He was about to have another back fusion and could barely walk around the block. And there was something magical about that weekend, honestly, because while we were there, he just said, Dana, I haven't felt this good in like 6 months. There's a lot of things you can attribute that to, but ultimately, I think there's a spirit there. And you could call it divine intervention. You could call it a number of things, but it was real. And he rallied in a way that I don't think he even thought he would be able to.
He was all over the place. He was such a great cheerleader. I remember seeing him, and he just made sure he was there for you every moment, and he had everything that you needed. And he did.
Great.
You never would have known that he was struggling with his own physical pain.
Totally.
And it's incredible.
It is. I think seeing what other people are doing and seeing the challenge and the trial of all of that, I think it lifts you. I think it puts you in just a higher, like gives you a higher state of perspective. And it's pretty special.
Going back to your fundraising, you were able to raise, what, $34,000, I think you said. And I think of those kids and the families who are going to benefit from that money, which is, you know, that's a tremendous value to them in that part of the country. And what does knowing that Dana Bouchard from Southern Utah went out for 36 hours, climbed a hill in order to provide that for them, what does that do for them when they know that someone across the world cared enough about them? Those ripple effects of our impact is incredible.
Yeah. And I can't say it other than I feel deeply connected for whatever reason to the program and to those kids and to those families, even though I've never met them because I haven't yet gone to Nepal. It's something I just can't really explain, but I just feel connected to them. And I hope that this Job Skills Training Center is going to be, it's going to be a game changer for them. And I, you know, who knows what those feelings or what their thoughts will be around like this random person that chose to do this for them. I will get to meet some of them soon. And I just think like sometimes you're prompted or you feel inspired to do this because it's bigger than you and it's not about me. The climbing part of it I love and the physical aspects I love and the mental challenge I love. And so I guess that part of it is for me, but a big reason why I chose to do this is because I've been blessed with mentors and coaches and an education and abundance in my life. Like, I don't really want for anything. And I just thought, you know, like I have a chance to utilize all of that in a way to give back to these families and kids in Nepal who don't have those kinds of resources around them.
It's a beautiful thing what we can do with when we really focus on what we can give back and what we can utilize. Because like you said, I think that's a perfect word when you use the term, we're blessed. You know, mm-hmm. if you can use what you're blessed with yeah. to help other people.
Sure.
And to look outward to other people, it just becomes so much more than what it ever could be. And that's yeah. what changes us. I think that's yeah. that's the catalyst that changes us. If we're right. looking for change, that's what's going to change us. It's not just like, sure, I can go run a marathon and finish it and feel good about myself, but that's kind of temporary.
Right. Right.
You know, what's going to be that lasting change that mm-hmm. that helps us understanding like all of this that we're talking about?
Right.
It has to be a little bit bigger.
Yeah, I think that's why like the inspiration came to me in the first place was just that I knew, yeah, I know I can go climb this mountain, but it needs to be more than that. For me, it for some people, like just climbing it is going to be a big, big deal. And I cannot ever take away from anybody who's pushing themselves. Like I said before, I'm inspired by it all the time. But I think once you get to a point where you recognize, okay, now it's time for me to give back. That's where I was. So. And,
well, everybody comes with a different why. That why might
totally.
Be, you know, like someone like your husband may be overcoming physical pain or someone may be overcoming grief. And that's their why for that time on the mountain. I mean, we all bring a different why with us. Mm-hmm. And then collectively, I think that's the spirit we feel when we're there.
Absolutely.
It's all these different whys coming together, creating this ability for us to exceed mm-hmm. everything that we ever thought was possible.
The stories on the mountain, I know they kept me going. And I just thank everybody who did believe in me and who believed in Eternal Hope International and to help these kids.
There you have it, My Everest, the latest episode of the 29029 podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you get your favorite podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about 29029 events or read more stories from an incredible community of individuals, you can head over to 29029everesting.com. That's 29029everesting.com. I'm Colleen Rue, the voice of the mountain. Keep climbing. We'll meet you at the next summit.